Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Gray, and this is Seven Generations Radio. Welcome. And my guest in the studio is Danny Lutz. And coming in shortly, Consuelo Newman will be joining us. So nice to be with you. And we'll be talking about some of the important issues of the day, and particularly as they affect future generations. And Danny, before we went on the air, you were mentioning some developments with the DARK Act. Do you want to go into that a little bit, explain what the DARK Act is and what's going on with it these days?
Well, for your listeners, the official title of the bill, which is before the U.S. Senate Agriculture Committee right now, is the is House Resolution 1599, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015. Some call that a misnomer. I don't tend to disagree.
Some people call it what?
Calling it the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015 a misnomer, and I tend to agree with their assessment. Mm-hmm. Others call it the Deny Americans the Right to Know Act, or the DARK Act, which probably is more appropriate.
Okay, could you explain what this act does, purports to do?
Okay, I'll give you what it's the way the text reads at the moment, because it coming out of the House of Representatives, it underwent some major deletions from when it was introduced by Representative Mike Pompeo of Kansas on March 25th of 2015. It presently prohibits the states, such as what Vermont has done and others, from enacting laws that would require manufacturers of food items to list on their label whether these food items contain genetically modified or genetically engineered ingredients. Also, it specifies a process, a very convoluted process, by which all persons must go through with the United States Department of Agriculture to obtain a label for their products, even cottage industries such as you see at our local farmers markets.
Hmm.
Further, as I said, there have been some major deletions. It also, when it was first introduced, there was provisions in it that would have prohibited anyone from creating a label for any of their food products that they make themselves, declaring that theirs were GMO or genetically engineered ingredient free, because, to quote the text then, this would imply that their product was superior to that of the agribusiness corporations. So, since it got to the Senate, I noticed reading the bill the other day that that language was deleted. Other language deleted from the bill would have allowed up to 20% genetically modified or genetically engineered product into a food item and still have it qualify as natural or organic. That has been deleted, and the language applying to natural has been watered down in the present version before the Senate Agriculture Committee.
So, listening to what you're saying here, I believe that the consumer's last defense then would be to look for the organic label, and that would still assure them that it's GMO-free. Is that right?
Well, once again, we can't be sure until this bill reports out of the Senate Agriculture Committee, because we can't be sure what they're going to insert into it or take out.
Right.
My definition of organic is that it is as it comes from the field, without any man-made additives or alterations. Now, something curious about some research I've been doing, and I showed you the mailing I got about the, and I'll tell you about that in a moment. GMO is being, that is, genetically modified organisms are being stretched in their definition now to include hybrid organisms. Now, a generation ago, when you played the Punnett squares with genetics and such and created a hybrid plant or animal like a mule, that plant, that was a hybrid. It was called hybridizing. It was called, it wasn't called genetic engineering. Now, that is included in the genetic engineering process, according to these corporations, the same as when they take a gene from a microbe in the ocean and insert it into a corn kernel or corn genome and have a corn crop that is resistant to glyphosate, excuse me. These are all lumped. They've all been commingled and co-mixed together, so that it's hard to tell where one definition ends and the other begins. And of course, this is to be reckoned by the United States Department of Agriculture.
I wonder how this would hold up under a constitutional test of a violation of freedom of speech, being unable to disclose facts about your product and the ingredients in your product. It seems blatantly unconstitutional in violation of freedom of speech.
Well, apparently they feared that coming out of the House Agriculture Committee, because the language I spoke of earlier that said that you could not declare on your product label that you were GMO-free or genetically engineered-free, because of the language that used to say this implies that your product is superior to that of the agribusiness giants.
But they've taken the wording out, you say.
Yes. Coming out of the House, that language has been taken out, and that was just 2 weeks ago. And, of course, you know, the Senate and the House are in recess right now till after Labor Day. I've been in touch with the Senate Agriculture Committee, and they have not set a date for hearings on House Resolution 1599 for the Senate Ag Committee.
Do you have a feeling about which way the Senate's going to go on this?
I fear they're going to pass it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the president will veto it.
That seems ridiculous on its face. But, of course, a lot of ridiculous things happen. But okay, well, let's keep monitoring that situation. But to me, it just seems to be a blatant violation of freedom of speech. I mean, at the same time that we're protecting the wealthy to be able to have freedom of speech to destroy essentially our political process through campaign contributions that have been labeled as speech, and therefore to protect unlimited campaign contributions, undermining the entire democratic process, and that's protected as free speech, and yet they've got to stand up and protect people's rights to label food in the same vein. Consuela Newman is with us now. Thank you, Consuela, for coming in. And I'd like to hear from you about what your thoughts are on what do you consider the most important issue of the day, or what issues are most troubling to you at this time?
Well, as relates to this bill, it's like you said, it's absolutely shocking that we would even attempt to put a bill like this through, and that it is sailing through the House of Representatives and got even worse since December. And that the other thing that I find shocking is how little response there seems to be from the public in general. And that this will go a huge step backward, and very difficult to reverse these laws once they pass. And so especially for families and children, and I'm very sorry that Marianne couldn't join us today, because she has several young children. There are things, for instance, that Similac, is just so utterly shocking that virtually every ingredient in Similac is bad for children, and a lot of GMOs in it, all kinds of, so that children from the moment they're born are being bombarded with toxins of all sorts. And it amazes me that we are not taking a far stronger look at this, because these companies, Monsanto and Dow, now own, I don't even know what the percentage is, 60% or more of the seed stock in the world, and they're going for all of it that they can get, and for the sole purpose of forcing people to buy their seed and do it on an annual basis, as they've managed to do in India and many other countries to disastrous effect. And we sit by, and a lot of people, a lot of friends of mine even, who have, you know, who they'll say, well, we'll just do organic. We'll just grow our own food. And they don't realize that this will pervade everything. And pretty soon there will no longer be very much food, because these genetically modified foods are very aggressive, just like the Frankenfish thing, which was passed. There's no way of knowing exactly. They fast track these things, what the effects will be, and by the time we find out, it's almost impossible to reverse it. And Monsanto and all their friends have hundreds of lawyers that they pay. But what I find really shocking about this legislation is that part of it says if anything is found to be deficient, if you, you know, have cancer or anything else is proven to come from our stuff, you can't sue us. The fact that we can even do that in any legislation to me is beyond shocking. But it's also true the health with the pharmaceutical companies. So this isn't the first time. This is happening more and more, and people are not aware of the implications of these things and what it does to their health. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know, this strikes me as just another symptom and a natural product of a system that we have, a free enterprise system, that so much protects the profit motive and is so bought into the profit motive that now permeates all of our lives, so that we are all saluting to this profit motive and will do anything in order to enhance this bottom line, even if it means undermining our own health, hiding the truth, obscuring information, or, you know, destroying future food supplies, or even destroying the climate and the planet, all because for the sake of the bottom line, which we have bought into and we salute. It's now become a religion in this country in some circles, and I see, I'm going to say the name, Donald Trump, being the high priest of the capitalist system that honors free enterprise and profit to justify any sort of behavior, whether it is any extremes of inequality, destruction of the environment, misleading information about products that are good for you, obscuring information to tell you about products that would be damaging to you, all in support of this God called profit.
Well, Joe, along those lines, I think it might be well to point out that Donald Trump, wealthy though he is probably just the figurehead for the people who are actually running the show. Now, I also want to point out, so the listeners understand, personally, I am not opposed to agritechnology that has yielded these kinds of crops. I just want the freedom to consume or not to consume.
Mm-hmm. Sure, we should have freedom of choice. How are you going to have choice without information?
Well, we economists call it consumer sovereignty, that the consumer is supposed to have the last decision of whether to buy or not buy, use or not use.
And you only are able to make that decision if you have information upon which to make your decision.
Exactly. It's without information, you're in a dictatorship.
And this isn't just GMO. It's massive and pervasive, as you know. But for instance, the House of Representatives voted 300-131 very recently to remove country of origin labels from chicken, pork, and beef. Mm-hmm. And within a week, within 2 or 3 days of this passage, the United States finalized a deal with China whereby we will provide the chickens here, which, as you know, from highly toxic farms, massive, just horrific conditions, we will provide the chickens. The chickens will then be sent to China, where they will be cleaned preventing our labor force from getting those $11 an hour that they're entitled to make, mm-hmm. instead of paying like $1, $1.25 to the Chinese worker. So in other words, eliminating how many jobs? Quite a few. And then the same chicken is going to be sent back to us, and we, the consumers, are going to buy it.
And without knowledge of where it was processed.
With no knowledge whatsoever. And then other things, for instance, the fact that we've been buying, that I've been buying for years, beef from New Zealand and Australia, knowing perfectly well that their beef is allowed basically free-range beef, I won't know the difference when I go buy beef as to whose beef it is. Mm-hmm. And on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, you're referring to what's called COOL, the country of origin labeling, which was just nullified in the Congress this year through an act of the World Trade Organization. Something I want to share with you, if I may, well, you brought up China in this. I received this in the mail yesterday. It's an invitation to become part of a lawsuit filed by Cargill, Archer Daniels Midland, and Transcoastal, the Nebraska Corn Growers Association, the Illinois Farm Bureau, and a whole raft, about 40,000 other farmers, over the fraud committed by the Syngenta Corporation of Switzerland, which, by the way, Monsanto is trying to acquire right now, so they can pull an inversion and save $400 million in taxes, but that's another story. Syngenta created corn with what they call the MIR162 gene, which was to be resistant to certain butterflies, among the monarch butterflies, which don't do corn any harm, but this gene would be hostile to the monarchs. They released the corn, this MIR162 corn, in 2010. And they assured Syngenta, that is, assured the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, that they had clearance from China with coming within a few days to accept this corn for under world trade agreements. Well, of course, the Chinese didn't know anything about that. So our ADM, Cargill, Transglobal, and the others, and the elevators to the West, just mixed corn without separating it or anything according to who had produced the seed. And when the grain got to China, they put a blue light on it and found the PMI, the phosphorescent indicator. They said, we're not taking this. Several billion, with a B, tons of corn were destroyed in China that had been shipped from the U.S. No one's been paid for it. So the big three, Cargill, ADM, and Transcoastal, are suing Syngenta, and
under WTO arguments?
No, this is under U.S. federal court because the fraud was...
But it's not based on discrimination in violation of WTO agreements?
No, not in this case.
What is it based on? What is their argument?
Good question, because I haven't responded to them, mm-hmm. and I'm... Although I don't really want to, I think I am going to become a litigant so I can get inside on some of the paperwork. Of course, that's, you know, folks, you can say, hey, you talk out of both sides of your mouth. Where's a little bit of money? You're ready to jump on it. It might be $5,000 tops for me if it worked out to that much, which would be enough to throw me into the next tax bracket. But the issue was that the Syngenta defrauded the growers and these processors, Cargill, ADM, and Trans, by leading them to believe they had approval pending on the acceptance of China of this kind of grain, when they didn't. So they're being sued in federal court.
Okay, so it's basically a fraud.
Yes, this is fraud, and it's in the U.S. This is in the, what's the circuit here? Anyway, well, I'll find it. I'd have to go online to get it, but it's in the federal circuit court in Minneapolis is where the case is initially to be heard, and then there's an ancillary action coming out of Dallas, Texas, and numerous other places. So this is going to get really interesting and ugly. Now, finally, in 2015, out of the negotiations for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, China agreed to take this MIR 162 grain in 2015 after refusing it for 4 years.
So you think the future may be different?
Future already seems to be different.
So, but they are rejecting it now, but under the TPP they will be accepting it.
Most likely.
Yeah. I wish we had all the information about the TPP.
Amen.
Well, Consuelo, I want to ask you a question. Now, are you of Hispanic origin?
My mother's Chilean.
Okay. Now, I ask you that because I'm very curious what your reaction to and what the Hispanic community's reaction has been to Donald Trump's statements about Hispanics in the United States, and particularly the throwing out the reporter from Univision in one of his press conferences. Are you in touch with what the community reaction is to these kind of statements and actions?
Well, I do keep up with what LULAC has to say, which is the largest Latin American organization in the country, but I don't really consider myself very highly versed on those general subjects. But, you know, like everybody else, it's not Trump per se that concerns me. It's the entire Republican Party. Where we saw them debate their so-called top 10, and they were virtually all in agreement. And the one who wasn't in agreement was apologizing for not being in agreement. So I think that the whole thing is utterly shocking, but not surprising. The one thing that people do say about Trump, and I to some degree agree, is that he's more forthright about it than a lot of the others. Mm-hmm. So, but it just shows the level of callousness and disrespect. But he disrespects anyone who doesn't have as much money as he does. I mean, he disrespects whole chunks of the entire American population. So this is an opportunity for Latin Americans to rally once again, and they have some very sophisticated people and groups. You know, the idea that the United States have that's extremely ignorant, that the Latin Americans are Mexicans or Salvadorians or just, you know, people from the pueblos, is absurd. It's insulting for multi-generational Americans who, by the way, you know, people say, oh, well, I'm an American. I said, well, I'm even more American than you because I'm North and South Americans because, as you know, America, which named after Vespucio, who was Italian, but anyway, the Dominican Republic is not the United States. And so there's so many layers and layers of ignorance about Latin America. And I'll just tell you one little tiny thing. I have most of my Latin American friends speak 4, 5, 6 different languages. So it's absolutely absurd to have someone come up to you and say, oh, you seem to speak English rather well. And I'll say, well, English was my first language from England. I'm an English subject, you know, but I have a friend who travels all over the world and does all sorts of extraordinary work. And I've had people say to me, well, more than one, several people say, well, do we have to translate this for her? So just because they knew that this was a Spanish-speaking person, and this is rampant. So I think what really needs to happen, and I'm hoping that it will eventually, is a sense that, you know, a huge change, a shift. And that's going to take decades. And I don't think it's the Latin Americans, per se, that need a reality check. It's the rest of us.
I think what Trump has done by triggering this response of support from basically the European origin peoples, the white Anglo-Saxons, trying to preserve what they feel is some manifest destiny that they're supposed to rule this Earth and particularly this country. But this has exposed a following which I think was previously undercover of politically correct language. And once that veil has been stripped away, now we're exposed to, and we can see in stark reveal, how strong this, you might say, xenophobia or this anti anybody who doesn't look like them is. And I feel that it strikes a lot of fear in many of the good people who live in this country who may look Hispanic and then would be some kind of targets, regardless of the fact that they may have been here for several generations, that they can now be accosted and asked for some papers. I mean, this is the kind of fear that this triggers. And it is reminiscent, and if you look at some of the quotes, it's reminiscent of things that happened in Nazi Germany, if you go back in the history.
Well, Joe, I was going to say, as you were speaking, that it's not just Latinos that are having, that this is an exposure to, because this is just the same white supremacist attitude that has been exposed by the fact that Barack Obama became president. And it's really extremely shocking, and I was amazed by it myself, that the amount of racism against him is truly astounding, and all the levels that it's on. And it's not only the Black Americans, it's Islam, Hindus. I mean, you could just go down the whole list. Anyone who is not Anglo-Saxon or whatever, Irish in this area. So I think that exposure of anything is a good thing. I think it gives you an opportunity to examine it, heal it, deal with it. So on that level, I think that it's good.
Well, the danger is the demagoguery. And it, to me, it has allied itself with what I see is a religious adherence to the prophet motive. And he sees things in, everything is interpreted in the realm of business, in such that his life, and it seems he expects everyone's life, to be controlled and to adopt the values that are given to us by capitalism. Unfettered free enterprise capitalism that supposedly would not destroy the earth as we know it, that would not remove all jobs, that would create tremendous inequality, that would not undermine all natural products for the sake of pharmaceuticals that may kill you, but they may want you to believe otherwise. So I think we're learning a lot. We're getting a lot of exposure, but the great danger is the demagoguery, and the voice of reason has got to be maintained. Now, you see on the other side of the spectrum, you've got someone like Bernie Sanders, who is then pointing out in stark contrast to everything that you hear that the business side can do no wrong. And Bernie is basically saying, look, these are the things that we need to correct if we need, if we want to maintain a free enterprise system that has so much to offer, which has so much good to offer. If we're going to maintain it, we've got to protect against the abuses. And the abuses come from all kinds of directions, and they're very obvious to see. But I think this obviousness is coming out in stark relief right now, and that which way this thing goes is going to be critical for the future of this country.
Absolutely, but I think that it's fair to say that unless we deal with Citizens United, if we deal with the actual issues, if we were to deal with the matter of community-funded elections like we supposedly were going to get 8 years ago, or was a possibility, things of that nature.
Publicly funded elections, is that
yes.
What you mean? Yeah.
You know, where everybody paid $3, right. and then you would get a certain amount of money, mm-hmm. and that would be it. Those certain things to level the playing field as it is now, the only way it's going to work is down for us I mean, it's just going to get worse. It's not going to get any better. I mean, look at these laws that are being perpetuated where nobody can get sued. I cause you damage, but that's okay because the law protects me, and doesn't matter whether you you did anything to me or not, because I have more lawyers than you do. And look at all, I mean, years ago when all those organic farmers finally ended up at the Supreme Court, there were 60-some of them, because their rights had been violated by Monsanto seed from adjoining farms. Anyone with any logic would say, oh, well, that was their fault because their seed came into our, you know, ruined our crops. Instead, Monsanto won the verdict, and they said that they were stealing from their seed, which was absurd. Not a five-year-old would believe that kind of argument. And yet they won, and when they went all the way to the Supreme Court finally, the Supreme Court said, well, Monsanto won, but you can't go and sue, you can't go after these farmers. And again, we as a nation said nothing. And this is what is so shocking. We're saying nothing about a lot of things that is destroying our democracy, if we ever had one, and going to get to a point very soon where there is no return from all of this, where we will not have any recourse, we won't have any redress.
Why do we say nothing?
I think a large part is, and Danny, I'm sure you have some very good ideas about this too, is that I think just by looking at the normal way that these things happen, for instance, this anti-GMO thing where consumer reports say over 90% of the people are in favor of GMO labeling, and yet, except for Vermont, we weren't able to get any of that through, because in each case where they started at 80% in our side, they ended up losing. And the reason in each case seems to be consistently that the advertising, the millions of dollars that go into advertising, say two very important things. You're going to lose your job, or there will be fewer jobs, and the other thing is it will cost you more money. And those two things, and then the third area is there's nothing wrong with it. So all these things are, and I think ultimately it's just creating confusion. And a lot of this confusion was not created by Monsanto. A lot of this, look at the Agriculture Department, they have the food groups, and then they change, you know, they're constantly changing. You know, today margarine is good, tomorrow it's the devil. I mean, back and forth. So a lot of people are just very, very confused, but the research is there. It's unequivocal. If you were to get on in the internet, and everyone pretty much has access to that, and study this stuff, I just personally find it hard to believe that people wouldn't be more knowledgeable than they are. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I think it goes to security. Most people do not want to do anything that will risk the modicum of security that they enjoy. I believe it was Benjamin Franklin that said, those who would choose security over freedom will soon have neither. And that's what we've come to. 2005, a rider to a bill in Congress provided what's called the Halliburton Protection Act, which exempted Halliburton from most lawsuits for most of their liabilities, especially as defense contractors. Section 935 of the Omnibus Reconciliation Act of 2013, inserted by Senator Blunt of Missouri, who received $180,000 of campaign contributions in the last election cycle from Monsanto. He inserted that protects the agribusiness chemical companies from liability for their products and requires the USDA to accept the industry research results without any countervailing research at all. So
I think you hit on a real important point when you said security. And this, I think, is part of what I think is being done to remove people's security is a way of putting them into the herd mentality to do whatever big business wants them to do. If you're saddled with loans when you come out of college, the question of security is going to force you to buy into the system regardless of whether you want it or you don't want it. And people are afraid to speak because they may lose their jobs, they may lose their security, and always holding this threat and this danger over people, the loss of your security. And if they take away your Medicare, your Medicaid, your other public benefits and the safety net, by removing that, you're increasing the insecurity of people and making them more beholden and more responsive to this system.
And you also spoke earlier, about 10 minutes ago, about free enterprise. Name an industry where the small operator or the small entrepreneur still holds sway. For instance, in the agribusiness we're talking about, there are six major companies that control all of the agrochemicals and seeds in the world. Look at the auto industry. There are about 10 major retailers supplying all the automobiles in the world, manufacturers that is. Look at retailing. The box retailers have forced the small entrepreneur off Main Street and the side streets.
And this has undermined your local sustainability, which again was the backdrop of your security. And now you can only be secure if you protect all of this big business infrastructure that is going to deliver food to your supermarkets and so forth. So the way to fight back and regain security is to build local sustainability, local ability to survive. And to me, that means you've got to turn back to lower technology, because lower technology is something that we can manage and that we can do locally and bring jobs back locally. Well, but if we go to the, and I'm not against technology, because there's a lot of benefits that we get from it, and we can keep that. But to be entirely beholden to big business is what removes our security and makes us forever locked into the same system.
Well, Joe, I'd like to offer you a sobering thought. 99% of the people we know, the three of us, cannot eat unless someone brings the food to them. Now, my pantry's fairly full, but most people don't have anywhere near that large a hoard of...
Well, this is right, and I think 20% of the children in America are living in poverty and are hungry. And even if they are eating food, some of the foods they're eating are poisonous, basically, in the long run, if not the short run.
And the majority of the food that they're encouraged to buy, because they have very, very limited money, is the food that is going to eventually kill them and cause diabetes in children and all kinds of other diseases rampantly. And even people like ourselves that are a little bit more sophisticated than others, you go into the grocery store and it's a landmine. It's almost impossible. And there's constantly a shift. It's like a never-ending battle. For instance, stevia. Everybody's told, okay, well, stevia is an alternative. It's natural. That's true. That's if you don't add anything to it. But the majority of so-called stevia, the number one ingredient is dextrose, and dextrose is sugar. So you go in there, you're a diabetic, you buy stevia because you think you're going to do something good for your body, and you end up having sugar spikes, and you have no idea where it's coming from. And you multiply this 1,000 times. This legislation, which is being proposed right now, and alluding to what Dan said earlier, everyone on the agriculture agriculture committee got a minimum of $100,000 in this last election cycle, and many got significantly more. So this is the kind of thing that
we only have a 30% or 35% voting record in this country. I mean, you mentioned the figure 80% are against or, you know, in favor of something, but who's voting? And how do we get people to vote, and what's happened to that?
I think it's very simple. In many, many countries, you're required to vote, and it's a holiday. if we required our people to go out and vote, the people who don't vote, who are the people who are getting undermined, would have to vote. Because if they don't vote, they would get some sort of docking of their pay or something, which is sort of inherent of all these other. And most countries have, of those that do this, have 99%, 98% voting. But we claim that the reason we don't do that is because we want people to have freedom. But that, as you know, is an absolute lie. It's just that the people, you know, therefore, that would solve the problem if we were to pass a law to say that.
Well, I'd like to throw in another example. You were talking about the quality of food people get and where it comes from. I never thought I would see the day it would come to the point in West Virginia where there are entire counties that do not have a grocery store. Clay County lost its last supermarket about a month ago. Now, if you live in Clay County, you've got to go 25 miles each way to find a supermarket.
Why?
They pulled out. So what about the 70-year-old grandmother who doesn't see well enough to hold a driver's license or own a car anymore? How does she get food?
Well, and to me it goes back to, it relates to this whole question of burning of fossil fuels. And if people have got to travel long distances, because we've made it so basically inexpensive, if you were going by horseback, wagon, or on foot, you'd have to distribute your supply depots close to where people live. And so your distribution of goods would have to be located in proximity to the people. Now the model is that you get in your car and you drive a long distance and get to a big box store. You've eliminated your local store. Your local sustainability is gone. Your local network with your farmers, except for our farmers' markets. Thank God we've got them. And this is the wholesale shift, which has come about through free, almost free fossil fuel goods. And now we see what this is doing to the planet. Will this force a return to local supply depots distributed in proximity to the people? Is this even going to be possible? But now that products are so cheap at the big box stores, and they pay their employees so little, you know, it's going to be difficult to make any kind of a change in the other direction.
I'm afraid the answer is no on that score, because of something else we economists call economies of scale. The small store is not going to be given the same price consideration at the wholesale level that the box retailer gets. So they're going to be more expensive, and they're going to be forced out.
Just like books and everything else by Amazon. I mean, it's endless.
Local bookstores, suffer. We're fortunate to have one here in Shepherdstown, but I fear that that's something that's disappearing in most of the small towns across the U.S.
But I think you did mention one thing that is very true, which is that the commitment to local sustainability also has grown significantly. And the organic business as a whole has increased nationally 20% over the last, three times over the last 3 years. So there are other things, solar panels. I mean, there are things that are happening that if we were to embrace them would make a significant difference. We like retraining all those coal miners to alternative, because there are only 6 companies in the whole state that provides solar panels. And we can make 95% of all those ingredients we can make in West Virginia. So on many levels, we could take advantage of that, and we could do, and there've been training has been offered. So what's standing in the way is this attitude of us, them, which in that particular level doesn't really exist so much. It just needs to be overcome. And I think that there are a lot of things that, sometimes things do get destroyed and then you're sort of back to basics. And I think basics are always the best thing.
But we get blocked out of doing basics. And as Consuela was speaking, I was thinking of an example well-intended by health departments and land use regulations right here in Jefferson County. For instance, just try to open a bakery in your home because you make good pepperoni rolls or good pumpkin applesauce bread that people want and would buy. The rules there, or the regulations, are for a good purpose, but they block you out financially and regulation-wise, just like this labeling regulation in HR 1599 is going to hurt the farmers market people. For instance, Kelly Sabagna, into the legislature this past session, introduced the legislation to allow raw milk to be sold to knowing consumers. The governor vetoed it.
Right.
Well, you know who's behind that. It's not the dairy industry. They could care less about Kelly Sabagna's goats. J.L. Kraft wants to have the control on cheese and processed dairy products. So they encouraged these health regulations, which therefore were for a good purpose. They've just gone overboard. Personally, I like homemade raw curd cheese from dairy milk, and from what we used to do on the farm, you wouldn't even want to look at it, but oh, it's delicious. It's just the process. We can't make a good American cheese now because we're too clean.
Well, and yet they find, I saw a report recently about E. coli and bacteria present in meats, and there's a dramatic improvement in the quality of the meat and the level of bacteria if you turn to local organic grass-fed meats as opposed to the food lot meats.
Well, Joe, a sobering thought along that line. Less than 5% of the food products coming from China are inspected. We know what they use. They use anything they can get away with, and they figure that they can take the penalty. And they can always find somebody to fall on their sword and go to jail for it.
And this is all justified under the bottom line of profit for certain companies that are in control because of Citizens United. You know?
Now, you also know that our meat is not considered clean. In many countries in the world, they will not accept it. Not only our meat, they won't accept our corn, they won't accept a lot of things. Europe is entirely, at this moment, non-GMO. How long that's going to remain is a serious question. But when 64 countries completely ban it, it's not for no reason. And, you know, the fact that we, you know, and people say, well, you know, as you know, they think, oh, well, GMO is like genetically modified. So they think, you know, of course, as usual, you know, let's put you know, a nice face on everything. They think it's kind of like, they think that we're back to Mendel and doing gene splicing. That's what they think is GMO. So that's what they're looking at. And they're going, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, blah, 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 blah. And then you have, you know, hundreds and thousands of lawyers, including Hillary Clinton, who worked for them for over 10 years and now has one of their high executives as her campaign manager. And, of course, she also says there's absolutely nothing wrong with GMOs. And so on and on and on we go. But here we are.
Well, let's clarify on that GMO. Probably the organism itself there is nothing wrong with. But glyphosate does have residues, and that's what the European community is concerned with, that the residue may be carcinogenic or other maladies that they're still studying. Now, there's a new variety of soybeans and corn coming on called Enlist. It's from Dow and from Monsanto. It will be resistant to both glyphosate and a compound called 2,4-D, which is one half of Agent Orange. Now, I don't have to tell anybody what Agent Orange is. That stuff is too dangerous to be used in the volumes that it will be applied to America's crop fields.
You know that this last week, the Environmental Health Journal just published a saying that Monsanto's glyphosate causes massive kidney and liver gene function alterations. They also just recently did a thing with the island of one of the Hawaiian islands, Kai, whatever, that Monsanto and Syngenta and Dow all do massive amounts of their research, you know, their on the field spraying and research. Their children, their babies, are getting 10 times more heart conditions from birth than the mainland, and on and on and on and on we go, many other countries. But what you were saying about glyphosate, which recently our own government said that it was deadly and killer and carcinogenic, not a week later, the Congress passed this law. Not a week later, after this information was already there. And so it just goes on and on. And, of course, this past year, Bayer, they have what they call Bayer Crop Science, is the major manufacturer of this neonicotinoid pesticides, which is what causes the death of the colonies of bees around the world. And in the United States, it's gone down 42% in 1 year. And this has been, as we know, well-established, not here so much, but overseas. So much so that if you may recall that even Putin, whether it was a political grandstanding or not, at one point at the UN begs President Obama to please intercede on behalf of the bees of the world for, you know, so, I mean, it's just endless. So the question is, again, you know, here we are. What can we do? You know, there really has to be some more. We can complain, or what exactly? I mean, other than citizens, those things I think are critical. But right. What do you think?
Well, you mentioned before, you know, the internet provides the ability for people to get the facts, and this is so true, and it opens a new door that people can get around and get good information. They don't have to rely on the mainstream media, even though that media does dominate. Apparently 5 companies rule most of the media in this country. But there is a little bit of a problem with the internet and social media, for example, where a lot of people get their information. And that is, there is a self-selecting process by which you winnow down where you get your information. So it's not like everybody that goes on the internet is getting this broad spectrum of information. They often go back to the very same sources that give them whatever the security or the justify their own way of living, and on it goes.
But I think you would be fair to say that it's, and one of these studies that was just came out last week, that said that the New England Journal of Medicine, and I have wrote down a couple of these things, I don't have Dan's photographic memory here, says the EPA not asked the EPA not to allow Dow's Enlist Duo, and it talks about this toxic combo glyphosate 2,4-D, and it asked that GMOs be labeled, because it says the science and risk are flawed. The science consists solely of toxicologic studies commissioned by the herbicide manufacturers in the 80s and 90s, and the risk gives little consideration to the ill effects to children and infants, and it failed to consider ecological impact. So obviously, again, that brings up the fact that in most cases, or maybe even in almost all cases, the only people that are doing the research to substantiate these things are the foxes that are guarding the hen house.
Exactly.
And that is a problem, because unless they get permission, unless from these corporate companies to do partisan, you know, other research, which they never allow to happen, we will never have.
And for which there really isn't the funding, because who is going to finance that? It would require the people getting together in organizations that are going to provide enough money to do the kind of studies that are needed to prove. And, you know, the system, the capitalist system, permeates science as well and politicizes science, suppressing information, promoting different kinds of information. Even though you may have perfectly good scientists, their information may never see the light of day, or they're never going to get the money to do the studies that are needed to evidence the truth. And therefore, you're going to have people with a conflict of interest, a bias toward a particular area. They're going to provide the funding to get the results that they are looking for.
Well, as regards the DARC Act, I want to ask our listeners to get a pen and paper or whatever they want to use. On Monday, call 202-224-3121. You're going to have to make two calls, one to Senator Manchin and one to Senator Capito. Tell them not to vote for H.R. 1599, properly titled the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015, more appropriately, the DARC Act. Do not vote for this legislation. So,
I love these.
Give that number again.
It's the Senate switchboard, 202-224-3121. I can't remember Senator Manchin's direct office number, but Senator Capito's number is 202-224-6472.
And it just takes 5 minutes to call, and actually people are picking them up and talking. So that is very – and also, West Virginia is one of the four states that is considered pivotal in this vote. So it's very important that we call and that everybody we know call and we call everyone we know to call and so forth and so on.
But I see constitutional reactions here, both in violation of states' rights, that a state would not have the right to protect their own food supply or to make statements about that are accurate and truthful about products within their state. That is a breach to me of states' rights, as well as the freedom of speech, a right to say the truth about a food product. That those two constitutional grounds are going to emerge. It will definitely be court challenges if this ever thing, if this ever gets through. Of course, we know the erosion that we have experienced in the protection of our basic freedoms, particularly through the Citizens United decision saying money is speech and putting corporations even at a level superior to the average citizen.
Well, Joe, I don't want to jump in on top of what you had to say, but I've been trying to get 5 minutes to testify before the Senate Ag Committee, and I've rate my chances 40-60 against coming up here in September or October when they have the hearings. But the Grocery Manufacturers Association has a red herring out by which they're telling the public that if you require us to do GMO labeling, it's going to cost millions in your grocery products. Well, I just wish my old buddy Jim Hightower could be there if I get to testify, because I prepared a demonstration to put it right on the table with a box of cornflakes that will show what a red herring that really is.
Okay.
We couldn't hear about it. I would love to hear all the details.
I mean, if it only costs millions, that's chump change for those people. It doesn't mean a bloody thing. That would be lost in the noise level.
Yeah, that would go against their golf dues.
Well, do you have any other burning issues you'd like to add to the conversation here? We only have a minute or two left.
Oh, well, I meant to bring some information, but I did not bring this. I didn't bring it with me, so I won't mention it. But
well,
there are. Go ahead.
Well, whatever your also to the listeners, whatever your position is on this Iran nuclear treaty, make sure Senator Manchin knows what your position is. Hopefully, I think it's going to be better than nothing, but there certainly reasonable people can disagree. Senator Capito appears to have made up her mind already.
No surprise there, but would you also tell our listeners about your event? I think it's on the 17th of September on the Jefferson Forum.
Invite
them to that?
Actually, it's the 19th of September, 8:30 to 11 at the Mountain View Diner in Charlestown. Alexis Baden-Mayer, who is a lobbyist and attorney for the Organic Consumers Organization from St. Paul, Minnesota, will be speaking on this Genetic Labeling Act, that is the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act of 2015, and she will be there to answer questions. And representatives from our from Representative Mooney's office will be there also to hear what she has to say, as well as Senator Manchin's representative and possibly Senator Capito's representative.
And that's the 19th of September. What day is that?
That's a Saturday.
From 8:30 to 11.
Mountain
at the Mountain
Diner.
View, which is in Charlestown, just as you get off the exit, what's
your exit? It's 901 East Washington Street. That's the easiest.
And it's on the left. Just as you get off, you see it on the left-hand side. And it has a fabulous Greek restaurant, by the way, with wonderful breakfast stuff.
Steve Pater to say that.
Thank you all so much for coming in. This has been Seven Generations Radio with Danny Lutz and Consuelo Newman. Thank you so much for coming in and a very interesting conversation.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to WSHC Shepherdstown, the voice of Shepherd. Thank you for tuning in.